listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is co-host extraordinaire, psychologist, Dr. Melody Fox.
And every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon, Pacific Standard Time, we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain you while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future.
Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions.
With many years of experience working with families in crisis, we've both been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals who are working hard to make this world a better place for all of us.
And we will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family.
And we're thrilled to have as our guest today one such talented professional in Dr. Nancy R. Sobel. What does R stand for, real quick?
Ray, R-A-E, but okay. Also Ray of Light.
There we go. She is a licensed psychologist in private practice here in West Los Angeles, California, working with individuals, couples, families, and groups. And Dr. Sobel specializes in the treatment of trauma, compulsive disorders, and addictions, and has consulted in the development of treatment programs throughout the United States and abroad, as well as travels the world working with those in the music industry. In the past year, she has been working in Haiti and co-founded a nonprofit called Global Adolescent Project. And this project relocates adolescent orphans from the dangers of displaced persons camps and tents living into safe housing. And Dr. Nancy, I just wanted to say welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And about your program, I understand your mission is to educate and encourage resilience and empower disenfranchised youth globally. And
it's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yes,
that's all we want to do. Very simple.
And in addition to safe housing, your project also pays for school tuition and provides mental health services, provides microloans and training for small local business development. And so Dr. Sobel, and I guess you told me you like to be called Dr. Nancy, has been a guest expert on numerous television and radio programs, including the Oprah Winfrey Show, E! True Biography, and KCRW's Which Way LA. So welcome, Dr. Nancy, Answers for the Family.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I was really curious on what drew you. I mean, you're so busy with all these other things you're doing. What drew you to going to Haiti? And because it's not the usual first place people think is a vacation spot.
Well, it wasn't exactly a vacation, believe me. I was watching the coverage on Anderson Cooper after the earthquake. And I was thinking the same thing. I was saying, how do we help these people? This just looks absolutely impossible. And I just felt kind of overwhelmed and disempowered. And then I saw all these babies lying on a sheet out in the baking sun because their orphanage had cracked and they couldn't go indoors. And their caregivers were sitting there holding them but staring off into space with a look on their faces that I'm very familiar with because of my work in trauma. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, that's it. I don't know how, I don't know when, but I'm going. And I wanted to go and just pick up each one of those babies for
right.
a minute even. It was very grandiose, really, and just hold them and give them that experience for a minute and then maybe do some training with the caregivers on attachment and on recovery from trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that if you have a calling and if you have something that you believe in, things will happen and the universe will cooperate, and next thing you know, you're there. And that is what happened to me. And it was just the funniest juxtaposition. You mentioned that I do a lot of work in the music industry, and I had been on tour with a band called Creed. And the lead singer, Scott Stapp, lives in South Florida. He does a lot of nonprofit work. He has a wonderful foundation called Arms Wide Open after his song. And he did a lot of work in the Hurricane Katrina. But he loves Haiti, and he wanted to do something. And he put together a private jet and loaded us up with 30,000 pounds of medical supplies, a team from an emergency room in a hospital. I was the only psychologist and a camera crew, and off we jetted in the dark of night because the airport wasn't even open. And, and we went off to Haiti 2 weeks after the earthquake.
Wow. What did you see when you got there?
Darkness. And it was scary because they told us there were people with machetes waiting to steal our stuff. And it was supposed to be this very scary thing. And it wasn't like that at all. It was empty in terms of what you would normally see in an airport. And we landed on this runway. The plane only had 2 hours for us to unload it. We had no way to unload it. And the American Air Force was there. They helped us unload. We set up camp on the tarmac with all our stuff. And we're saying, well, gee, now what do we do? And luckily, we met a local pastor who rented some buses. And we loaded up, and we ended up doing mobile medical clinics. But we stayed on the ground, literally on the ground. I woke up with a tarantula right next to my head the first morning.
Wow.
Literally on the ground, camping out.
My anxiety just went up thinking about that.
I just thought, if it gets in my hair, I'll never get it out. I have very thick, curly hair.
Wow, that's incredible, though. But, I mean, to go to another place. Now, I mean, I'm probably very naive, but... Do they speak English in Haiti, or did you have to learn another language, or?
Well, many of them speak a little bit of English, little bits and pieces, but the language there is something called Haitian Creole, which is a combination of French and an African language, because it was a slave nation, and they created this Haitian Creole language in order to form their revolution and gain their freedom. It was the first Western civilization settled by Africans in the world.
Wow.
So it has a very strong, resilient culture from those days of the revolt, the slave revolt. So it's Haitian Creole. I speak high school French. I was the only person on our trip that spoke any other language. And high school French, God bless my high school French teacher. That's all I want to say. You kids out there who are taking language, pay attention. You never know when you're going to need it.
Sure.
And it actually worked enough that I was able to do all of the triage for our group. So we set up these mobile medical clinics, and there were long lines, 500-600 people waiting in line to be seen for various medical problems. Mm-hmm. And I went down the line speaking in my broken French enough that they could make out what I was saying and in their Creole and tell me, you know, mal à la tête, you know, I have a headache, where are you sick, how old are you, how long has it been feeling this way. Some things were obvious because there were obvious broken bones and injuries like that. We birthed a baby.
Well,
we were there.
You were part of it.
That's right.
It was
experience.
Very exciting. I mean, it was life. It was death. It was very exciting. And, you know, these people were very grateful that we were there.
Oh, sure. I mean, they're getting help. And who else is there to help them? Although you hear on the news and everywhere else, Haiti, 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 and, you know, everybody's trying to help. It seems to be the cause of choice right now, which is very
well. I think you did hear that. I think it's dissipating. I think with Libya and what's going on in the Middle East, it's kind of dissipating, but the need is tremendous. Mm-hmm. And really, it's going to take 5 to 10 years to truly rebuild Haiti.
Well, it was such devastation.
Yes.
And I can't even imagine walking down that line and seeing what you were seeing. And from your experience there, you got prompted to start this Global Adolescent Project, or how did that work?
Well, first let me tell you that in Haiti, 70% of the population in 2009 was under age 30.
That's a very young population.
And, you know, all of these facts and figures are very difficult to accumulate now with all the chaos and in the last year or so. So these are a little bit old, but you get the feeling of what was going on. And 1 in 3 children under 14, only 1 in 3 lives with both biological parents. So think about our culture and kids growing up, you know, with two-parent homes or that sort of thing. 8% of all births in Haiti are given to teenage mothers. And 46% of all girls have been sexually abused. Mm-hmm. 46%.
Wow.
And of these, 33% are age 5 through 9.
Wow.
43% are 10 to 14. So it's a very big problem. Sexual abuse, sexual molestation, this kind of treatment of girls. And what happens is in the tent cities, you may have heard that the main prison in Haiti broke.
Right.
I say broke. It's a translation of Haitian Creole, broke, tombé. It fell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all the prisoners got out, and no one rounded them up. So many of them are now running the camps at night scaring people and stealing and committing sexual assault. So women are afraid to go out at night, and if they have to go to the bathroom, because the bathrooms are, you know, you have to walk down to a latrine. It's not like they're porta potties, basically, if you're lucky. And so they're afraid to leave their tent at night because they will get accosted. Last time I was there, I brought a suitcase full of whistles and flashlights to distribute to girls and women. And everyone has to go in pairs if they dare go out at night at all. And my girls, I met these two girls at this camp, the largest tent city in Port-au-Prince. And it's in Patienville. And it's actually on the grounds of a golf course. So they were very generous about allowing it to be used for this DP camp. But these girls had been orphaned from the earthquake. They were age 13 and 15. And they were huddled up, and at night they could hear rape in the next tent, just all around them. They could hear people being violated, and they were terrified. And they would come up the hill to where my, I call it my office, but it's really just a tarp strung up between some old pieces of wood, and that's where I would work, and people would stand in line and come to see me. And they would come up and visit me every day and just hang out. And I got to know them, and I thought, I can't leave them here. What's going to happen to them? They have no one to look after them. And also, in Haiti, after grade six, you have to pay for your education. There's no public education. So if you don't have parents, you're not going to school. And if you're not going to school, what happens to teenagers? They're going to hook up. They're going to meet men and have babies. Or they're going to be violated. They can get ill and die. There's just no one to look after them. It just was unthinkable to me. And I know how important this age was for me and how alone I felt, and I had every possible privilege. So for these kids, I just couldn't imagine. And they were very bright and very warm children. And so we were lucky because shortly before I arrived, some nurses from Ireland had been there. And they gave my partner, Matt Vasseri, who's from Huntington Beach, he's a fellow surfer. That's how we met. We were both volunteering at the camp, and we bonded through our love of surfing. And he had been given money, cash, by these nurses. It was $2,000. And they said, just do something good with it. You'll know what to do. And anyway, we're talking about, what are we going to do with these kids? What will we do? And one of the Haitian drivers had a sister who had an apartment. And he said, you know, there's room in her apartment to rent. And we said, well, how much is it? And he said, $2,000 for the year. So it just felt meant to be. Suddenly we had $2,000. That was the cost. And the driver hadn't overheard how much money we had. This just happened to be a coincidence.
Okay, I was just curious about
that. No. It was a coincidence, which is, you know, where God remains anonymous. So anyway, within 10 minutes, we had the kids in the apartment. So that started two. Now we have seven in the apartment. And we're looking to buy a building. We have spotted a building that we can get for $10,000, which will house close to 30 children upstairs. And downstairs, we can run some small businesses, which I'll tell you about.
Wow, that's great. I mean, $10,000 is a lot of money there. It's really not that
much. Exactly.
Now, I might be premature on this, but if somebody wanted to donate towards your project, how would they get a hold of you? Do you have a website or any place they could go to?
Thank you for asking. Yes, we do. Our website is www.globaladolescentproject.org, globaladolescentproject.org, and you can donate online, and there's a button you press for donate, and all the donations are tax deductible. We have, we've applied for our 501c3 nonprofit status, but right now we're operating under a parent group called Global Health Review, which is taking our donations, so they're tax deductible, and then directing them straight to our kids. 100% of all donations go straight to the kids. We do no administrative fees. Matt and I go over every couple of months. We pay for our tickets ourselves. We pay for wherever we stay or we camp ourselves.
Yeah. Let me. I want to share with our listeners kind of what that means, because a lot of people don't understand what 100% of it means. As an investigator, I've done investigations of nonprofit organizations. And I was shocked to find out that in a couple of them, it was 59.6 and 59.3% of the money actually went to the people running it. which meant that only about 40% was actually going to the to what you were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I asked, I said, why was it? Why did this happen to where it was 59.6 and 59.3? I found out that there's a watchdog organization out of New York that says that if you reach 60%, they tag you as being fraudulent.
Oh, so
they're pushing it there.
Yeah, yeah. So my point for everybody listening out there, when somebody tells you that 100% of the funds that you are donating or services or whatever it is that you're putting in there, that it is all going to help these people, know how important that is. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge.
Well, for example, yesterday I do a Skype call with the kids once a week. Mm-hmm. And what that means is they gather in this local internet cafe. They have to scrounge around till somebody will let them use their laptop. So it's different every mm-hmm. time. Sometimes we have video, sometimes we don't, you know. Sometimes I'm just talking into space and hoping that they can hear me. And I can hear them through all the other background noise in the internet cafe. But they were very worried because we had sent over some money. And it's a complicated process getting the money there.
Sure.
To pay for water. They have a basin in the bottom of their building, and it costs about $50 a month or $60 a month to fill the basin with water. That's not drinkable water. That's water to use for bathing or cooking. And their cooking is about a 2 by 3 foot square piece of floor where they were using charcoal indoors to cook. Now we have a gas burner. We bought them a gas burner, so they're able to use that for cooking now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's how they live. This is not fancy living when I say they're in an apartment.
Right.
So there's no, you know, walk-in closet, huge kitchen. Yeah.
No flat-screen TV.
No, they're really dipping the bucket into the basin, drawing up the water, and then using that for their little handy shower. And
well, I want to talk about water, drinkable water. I mean, yes. I see on TV still late at night, you know, the commercials about the Haitians needing fresh water to drink. Does your project help with that as well?
Well, we buy water. You have to buy water. There's no running water in the apartment, and there's not a lot of running water unless you're very wealthy. Mm-hmm. So they do buy water, and that's how they get that.
There aren't any springs or anything anywhere, or it wouldn't be clean enough?
It's not
or...
clean now because with the earthquake, everything mm-hmm. was destroyed. And so there's a lot of projects over there now. In fact, that's how Matt first went to Haiti, was he went with some surfers who were bringing water filters.
Okay, I was going to ask about water yes. filters.
Yeah, that's actually more his thing. I don't know as much about it. But there are a lot of projects going on with water filtration. Mm-hmm. But that's really, you have to buy water.
Okay. So. Well, I was just curious about that because I know when I go backpacking or something, I take my water filtration thing and clean it all out, and hopefully that would
right.
be good enough.
But, you know, for the kids, it's only about $10 a month per kid for drinking water. It's not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So if you donated $10 a month, for example, you'd be giving one kid enough drinking water.
Now, and do you have that set up in such a way that if somebody were to make that donation,
yes.
that it can be an automatic thing, like
yes.
through PayPal or
exactly.
something like that?
We do have PayPal. Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, I was curious, though, you talked about the 13- and 15-year-old that started hanging out with you. They probably yes. felt very safe with you
yes.
up at your office.
Well, they were worried because their older cousin, who's 21, was working at the camp, and she kept yelling at them, don't go up there because you're going to make me lose my job. And they were just terrified. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I started teaching them English, and that was just what happened. But
okay, so organically came into play.
Kind of, yes.
So how do you get the kids involved in your project, the ones that you have now that you brought into the apartment living in a safe
house for
them?
Like, how did we find them?
How did they find them? Did they find you?
Believe me, there are thousands out there in Haiti. And, you know, the very first time I left Haiti, I got up I was in my airplane seat, and I thought, that was amazing. And I feel so insignificant because there are hundreds of thousands of kids like this, not just in Haiti. You know, it just chokes me up, all over the world.
That's right.
Living this way, mm-hmm. not just because of earthquakes, because of AIDS, because of poverty, global poverty. And kids who are adolescents literally fall in the gap. That's why we named it Global Adolescent Project, mm-hmm. GAP. Because little children get a lot of services, and there are orphanages for them and that sort of thing. And adults have services because they can work and what have you. Mm-hmm. But teenagers fall in the gap. And who's going to watch after them? And they just get lost.
That kind of reminds me of, you know, the children we have here. We've got children in foster care up till 18, but then they fall into this gap.
Yes.
You know, the transitional youth. But
yes.
Fortunately, in America, we, and especially in California, we do have some services for transitional adolescents.
Yes.
But, you know, overall, there's still a lot of people that fall through the gaps with our culture. I can't even imagine how many people fall through the cracks in another country.
Right. And then you have immigrants here in L.A. and throughout America, mm-hmm. adolescents who also fall through the gap.
Absolutely. Yeah,
exactly. And unfortunately, politically, our safety nets are getting fewer and fewer.
Yes.
Now, we have some questions that have come in that have been emailed in, and you were mentioning earlier in regards to the way in which women are being treated, especially young women. Now, this question was emailed in where it says, what I noticed during my trip to Haiti in 2007 was the blatantly disrespectful attitude that men in Haiti demonstrated towards women. It was very, very third world. I had thought that they would be more advanced given the Western influence on their culture. Do you feel that extreme poverty breeds this attitude?
Well, I certainly think that extreme poverty does not bring out the best in anyone. You know, it's hard to think. One of the projects that I'm working on with our kids is what I'm calling the Resilience Project. Resilience is something that's very important to me personally and in my my private practice and here in LA. And so if you learn to care about yourself, that's an important part of resilience. And when you care about yourself, you're going to care about others. And we do have a couple of boys in our project now. We started with all girls, but we do have a couple of boys now. We have actually 17 kids in school now.
That's
that we've
great.
Been paying for. So we have 7 kids living in the apartment and 10 more that are either still in the camps or living with other family members, but we are paying for school.
And how much is it to pay for school? Again, for those people that want to go on and set up through PayPal or something, you know, if for $10 a month they can provide water, for how much can they put in per month to pay for someone so that they can get an education?
Well, the school is probably about $110 a month per kid for school. So it's around $2,500 per year per kid for school. But just to get back to this idea of the kind of macho culture, what we're trying to do is create a community of kids that care about each other. And our idea was to train people within their own culture to help each other. So what we want to do is work ourselves out of a job. We want them to be self-supporting. That's why that third leg is empowerment, mm-hmm. because we're micro-loaning to help start small businesses. And we're doing this resilience project so that the kids will learn to focus on positives and to encourage one another and to focus on strengths and to treat each other better, so that this is boys as well as girls. And we see it in the house, in the apartment. It's so touching. If someone gets, they sell these little bags of water, and they're like a penny in American dollars or 2 cents. And if someone gets a little bag of water, they wouldn't think of just downing it, no matter how thirsty they are. They take a sip and pass it around, and everyone gets some. Same thing with an apple. Whatever it is that people have, they share. And it's very touching, and it's already from within of Global Adolescent Project, the concept of all for one, one for all, and mentoring one another and really encouraging one another. So, yes, it's true that in the culture there's a lot of abuse of women, and domestic violence is rampant. I worked in a women's clinic, actually, at the DP camp, where I did classes on domestic violence and how to fight it from within and how to empower women. And that's why we're doing this resilience project with the kids, to try to change the thinking from within, so that we've created this small community that will then grow Haiti from within.
It's wow. beautiful.
Now, how did the earthquake affect the families of the children you work with? You mentioned that some still live with families. Did they lose their homes? I mean, are they still able to participate in your project, or how's that worked out?
Well, if someone's living with an auntie or they've gone outside of we're primarily in Port-au-Prince, which is where the greatest damage is. But if they have someone they can live with, that's great, because we do have the three parts of our project. So one is just education, getting them into school. That's mm-hmm. the main thing, is getting them back into school. Once they're into safe housing, if we know they have safe housing and food to eat, because if you have food to eat and you're in school, you feel better about yourself and you can do so much more.
Sure.
Like one of our kids is actually going to start on a soccer team now. That is a complete miracle to me.
Yeah, I can't even imagine a soccer team in the rubble.
But that's what it will be. Exactly right. Exactly right. And Junior, one of our star kids, he's featured in our brochure, and you'll see him on our website. He wants to become a doctor. And he lives in the camp with his mother, who was injured in the earthquake. Her arm was injured. She used to make coffee in the mornings, have the equivalent of a coffee shop. And he's studying very, very hard. But he took us on a walk through his former house, which is complete rubble. And he said, oh, be careful of walking here. See this black ash? This is where the bodies were burned.
Oh, wow.
So that's still there. And we have a shot of the kids. I'm not sure if it's on the website, where they're on a hill of rubble where their old school was, and they're looking out in the distance. And under the rubble are still a couple of hundred bodies of children that were killed in the earthquake. And our kids are looking off into the future where they're building a new school.
Wow.
And that's the reality of Haiti, even today, a year, more than a year later.
Now, I know you mentioned the rampant sexual abuse that happens in the camps, but I've also heard that that makeshift housing and the camps can be very dangerous in Haiti, probably beyond that. In what other ways are these camps so dangerous, and why we need to get the teenagers and the young adults out of there into a safe place to live?
Well, obviously, drinking water, drinking water, drinking water, because you've heard about the cholera epidemic and just all kinds of other illnesses and infections. You know, the first time I went there, a young girl, 17-year-old, had been debating all day. She had a crush injury in her leg, and they needed to amputate her leg, and she didn't know whether she should do it or not. Can you imagine 17 having to lose your leg after surviving an earthquake? And this was right at the beginning of treatment and down there. And she finally relented and said, yes, take my leg, and she died of tetanus. She had never had a tetanus shot. So it's unthinkable. The things we take for granted, the kind of preventative medicine that's so normal here in America, the only soothing I can give you from that story is that after that, every single person that came into that hospital got a tetanus shot and was, you know, tested.
Right. And along those same lines, we have another email question that has come in that says, I recently read a report issued by the CDC that the conditions and the spread of disease is worsening. What are people on the ground there, such as yourself, actually seeing?
I can't say that it's worsening. In fact, I saw a lot more happening, more removal of rubble. I saw better irrigation through the camp. I saw people really caring about it and keeping it clean. There were a lot of, you know, I think it's 80% unemployment in Haiti, but there's a very strong cash business, and people work so hard there. Everybody's always working, whether it's digging or, you know, cooking. And you'll see these little makeshift barbecues set up in the camps where people are selling little bits of food or soup. So I can't say that I see it getting worse. I actually feel that it's getting stronger and better, and there's a lot more schools and things developing now.
Well, this is good to know. But again, this is why it's nice to get the information from someone like you who's there.
Yes.
And not necessarily a television report that doesn't always tell us what's really going on.
Right. And there are a lot of communities here in the States that are forming. And there was a big day-long seminar at UCLA recently where all kinds of organizations that help Haiti gathered and talked about what they were doing so we could all meet each other and network.
And coordinate, sure.
Yes. And I've been going back and forth to Boston because I had a child, a 14-year-old girl named Farah, who was medevaced from Port-au-Prince. She had been burned over 40% of her body, and Boston Shriners took her. And she's been there since Easter. She got to go on Easter. It was very emotional. And so she's actually at the school that President Obama is visiting today.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
So she's in school in Boston now. It's quite remarkable.
I just got chills.
Yeah, that's a story I could take an hour telling you. I won't do it. But God bless Farah and Rose.
Well, how are the children and the teenagers managing day-to-day there, what you've seen?
This is what's amazing about the kids. You know, there's no electricity, so it gets very dark at night, and they either have a little bit of a flashlight, but they don't want to waste the battery, you know. And we have a shot Matt took last time of them videotaping. They're doing those clapping games and singing in the dark and cheering each other on. And, you know, one thing about our kids is they know how lucky they are, and they're I don't have to teach them about gratitude. They live gratitude, and it's very inspiring and really something that we can all take a lesson from.
That's just what I was going to say. I think they need to come over to some of the schools here in California and sit down and really explain what gratitude really is, just by explaining what their position is in relation to the kids that we have around here.
Yeah, they're washing their clothes, their own clothes. They don't have a washing machine. They have a bin. They take the bucket of water. They fill the bin. They wash their clothes. They hang them outside to dry. Then they take an iron with coal, just like 100 years ago. They take hot coal, put it in the iron, and they iron their clothes. And these kids always look beautiful. If you look at the pictures, you'll see they always are well-groomed, clean, beautiful. Their hair done, teeth brushed, and they're doing it themselves. Wow. We have a little six-year-old that moved in and into the apartment. He appeared one day. He's the little brother of the girls, mm-hmm. and he had been out living in the country with the grandma, and the grandma couldn't care for him anymore. So he just appeared. One day I'm on Skype, and I see this little face, and I said, who's that? And they said, oh, this is our brother. And you can't send him away. Please don't send him away. So anyway, he's living there, and he's going to school now. And he's making food. We have shots of him, you know, chopping coconut and grating coconut. And he helps out just like everyone.
Wow. Well, I know we need to take a quick break.
Okay.
But when we come back, we'll be talking more to our guest today, Dr. Nancy Sobel, who is doing a wonderful project called Global Adolescent Project. And in Haiti, and we're going to talk more about that project and how you might be able to help support that as well when we come back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Dr. Nancy Sobel, and we are talking about Haiti.
And one of the questions I want to ask you, you as a clinical psychologist have been traveling back and forth there. I know you see a lot of mental health needs. How do you address those needs in your project and the people that you're working with?
It was a bit of a panic, to be honest with you, Dr. Melody. When I first went there, I was terrified. I thought, what the heck can I do? This is devastating. And I just tried to keep it very simple. One of the things is to really plug into existing resources. And by that, I don't necessarily mean organizations. I mean each other. Mm-hmm. Just like here in America, we have to learn to use the resources around us and each other. So I would have, amongst those 600 people waiting in line, I'd have people telling me, of course, they weren't sleeping, they had stomach aches, they were stressed out. And so I would hook them up with each other and form small groups. Mm-hmm. And I'd sit with them for maybe 10, 20 minutes, and I'd have them tell me, has there ever been a time when you were in an impossible situation and something worked out unexpectedly? And they would tell me those stories. And I'd say, okay, take a photograph of that in your mind and try to hold that picture. Now, tell me about what's most bothering you right this moment. What's the worst part of your situation? Mm-hmm. And then I said, if in 6 months it would be better, what would that look like? Take a picture of that. And then everyone in the group shares their picture of where they want to be. Mm-hmm. And then I made them all exchange. Everyone in, it's amazing. With all the poverty, everyone has a cell phone.
Wow.
So that's a good thing. That's a resource.
Yeah,
so
everyone connects with other people.
Exactly. So they can exchange phone numbers, share their pictures in their mind, and then encourage one another to share their pictures. So that's one small intervention that I did mm-hmm. over and over there. Mm-hmm. I brought these cards the second time or third time I went, I can't remember, that I translated into Haitian Creole on five different topics: stress management, resilience, grief, domestic violence, and alcohol abuse. And on one side of the card, they were little waterproof kind of 5x8 cards written in Haitian Creole that said, what is it? You know, three examples of what the problem is. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, three things you can do about it. Mm-hmm. And people were astounded. I brought 5,000 of those cards. Someone donated the money to print up those cards. I need to make more of those cards. So I brought those cards over, and it was so wonderful to see them look down and start to look away from the card because they thought it was going to be in English, and then see it was written in Haitian Creole. Mm-hmm. So it was something they could take with them. That's the other thing is, you know, I can't be there all the time, and I don't want to be. I want Haiti to grow Haiti and Haitians to grow strong Haitians. So what I wanted to do was leave something there that they could take and use. So it was very touching when they would see these cards and they could walk away with them. And I pictured them somewhere in the mud, someone picking one up, you know, walking along on a hard day and seeing it maybe out of the mud and getting some hope.
Well, I look at it, too. It's also a transitional object for them is
yes.
that they could remember you
yes.
and the support that you gave them.
Yes.
And they could take that with them and pass it along to other people, too.
Exactly.
And I do know we only have about 15 minutes left or so, but I wanted to make sure we talked about this. Now, your project does microloans. Can you explain what that is and how that works?
So one of the things that we have learned, you know, I've had a very quick education in global poverty, and I'm new to the game. You know, there are people that are much more experienced. But one of the things that we're finding is that you can start with a very small loan, $200, $25, you've heard there's a Heifer Foundation, buy a cow.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also found that if you microfinance women, they do better with their microloans than men traditionally because they spend it a little bit more wisely. That's what the research shows. Nothing against you men. but we actually have some men that we have helped too. One of our guys on the ground is a 30-year-old man named Steve who we could not live without. He helps us so much. And we microloaned him $250. He bought an all-in-one printer, which he rents out the use of it at the internet cafe. And he's already paid us back more than half through the money he makes mm-hmm. in the use of the printer. And that helps him support his wife died in the earthquake. And so it helps support him and his daughter. And he also helps us with the kids, looking after them and security and what have you.
So the Global Adolescent Project is much broader than just adolescent. You're really helping a whole community there.
It's youth, adolescent, young adult, being part of the community, interacting with various existing resources, not just people, but also organizations, mm-hmm. schools, like some of the schools we use, we're friends with them. We're spreading the word and helping them, and they're helping us and working together.
So it's really a group effort here.
We're trying to form a global adolescent community. That's
yeah,
the concept.
And it's beautiful. And I think for people to understand, I mean, how powerful the microfinancing part is, I don't think that they really get it. In other words, if you can make a donation, that money now is going to be loaned to somebody who is then going to be able to use that to start their business. And they're going to pay it back, which is going to allow them to loan it to somebody else.
Exactly.
And so
and
on,
mentor
and
each
so
other.
On, and mentor each other. So to me, I mean, this is real powerful. The concept of microfinancing, if you can do that, you can help so many people by being able to get it to an organization like this. I think it's wonderful.
Our girls just found out that one of their cousins made a connection through someone else in the community. They're taking spare tires and cutting them up and making slippers, you know, like flip-flops. So if we get that building, we can start a flip-flop shop.
I love it.
So we want to do an internet cafe and a little fashion show kind of, you know, a clothing store downstairs.
Sure.
And that would be a way to make money for the project and for them to be self-supporting.
Now, I was just curious. I know there's a lot of people going to Haiti trying to help out. Are there tourists that still go down there? Or
there are in certain areas, but it's primarily relief workers, at least in Port-au-Prince. It's all mm-hmm. relief workers staying in hotels and apartments. That's really where the business is for.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine, too, just I think the novelty of those flip-flops, too, would be
yes.
could go global, and
yes.
you could sell them globally. I think that's a wonderful idea and concept, and
yeah.
really hope that goes through.
Somewhere.
And, you know, if you want to donate or anything, or you want to learn more about the Global Adolescent Project, again, it's www.globaladolescent.org.
GlobalAdolescentProject.org.
Okay, forgot the project.
GlobalAdolescentProject.org.
Right, and if anybody out there, if you're driving, you can't write this down, you can always go to the website. You can go to the answers, the numeral for thefamilyblog.com. We will put that information there. And in fact, we'll set up a link to where you can click right on there. It will take you directly to there, and you can make that donation. Now, Dr. Nancy, I mean, what are the short-term and long-term goals, you know, for the Global Adolescent Project?
Well, thank you for asking that. One of the things that we've been advised is not to overshoot the mark. I mean, I started thinking, oh, my God, there's thousands of kids like this that we need to help. And we have stacks and stacks of requests of letters written by school principals, relatives, even the kids themselves saying they know someone who. So what we decided to do was start small. So we're trying to limit it to 25 to 50 kids for the first year because we want to make sure that we know what we're doing and that we do it well. We want to make sure that we identify the local resources and that we're really developing within the community of Port-au-Prince and coordinating with other resources. Once we feel confident with that, we'll expand. And ultimately, long-term, we do want to grow this global adolescent community around the world. We have people on our board from the Philippines and from Thailand and people that have worked in Nairobi. So we're hoping to expand to those areas as well. And also, I've done quite a bit of work here in Los Angeles with another project called Boarding House Mentors. Mm-hmm. And we work with disadvantaged youth from the inner city. We take them to the beach and teach them about the environment and surfing and that sort of thing in the summer. So we know there are kids right here in our neighborhood that also need help.
Yeah, that could you talk a little bit about that program that you have here?
Yes.
In California. I think it's just a wonderful program. And since we live near the beach, there are so many kids in the inner city that I know I've worked at. We're only a few miles from the beach, but have never seen the ocean.
Never seen the ocean. It's remarkable. So we get a bus together and we bring them down. And, you know, they're all duded out and they're inner city gear, shall we say.
Stripped down.
And, you know, we have these wetsuits available for them. And before you know it, everyone, it's a great equalizer. Being in the ocean is a great equalizer, and there are so many metaphors to surfing, you know, learning to find balance, standing up for yourself. And we have volunteer surfers who come and help teach the kids how to surf. And we pretty much get almost everybody up on their boards by the end of the summer.
Wow. I think that's fabulous. I think it's a great program. You know, you just do so many wonderful things, Dr. Nancy.
It's fun.
I just love everything that you're doing. And I also know, I don't know if Alan knows this or not, but you travel a lot with musicians and you help them. And I'm just thinking of the parents that listen that have teenagers that might be interested in becoming musicians and they're fearing, oh, they're going to get into drugs, rock and roll, and all this other stuff. Any words of advice or anything you could give them or the teens to keep from going down that road?
Well, we all know that music is very healing, and I'm sure anyone can think of a period of their life, and it's colored by the background of what music was popular at that time and what music they loved and how, oh, that song just carried me through that particular time. Well, that happened because someone else was also in pain and managed to transcend their pain, transcribe their pain into music, mm-hmm. and transform it into some beautiful product that we could all enjoy. So it's transcend, transcribe, transform. That's what I'm always telling my musicians. And I also help with another nonprofit. I'm nonprofit Nancy here. but I helped start this other nonprofit called Music Cares, which helps anyone in the music industry get social services all over the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's true. You know, it is an alternative lifestyle, and it can be scary. But again, there's positives in everything, mm-hmm. and it's all about being supportive of the creativity and learning how to turn it into something positive.
And I think that's what you're doing, too, in Haiti, too. You're finding what's positive. You're supporting that in the children, empowering them, building up their resiliency and self-efficacy and being able to take care of themselves. And I think that's just wonderful.
Thank you.
Absolutely, yes. You know, and when you were mentioning in regards to the music, and I think that what a lot of people need to realize is that just because the media tends to want to hype sometimes the negative sides of it, you know, that doesn't mean that for the parents out there, if your child has a desire for this, that somehow it means they're going to be taken into this dark world. It can be very beautiful. There's a lot of incredibly positive things that come out of it. But unfortunately, our media doesn't focus on that. They focus on when the people break down or when the people then go in a different direction.
Well, now there's a whole culture and community of recovering people in the music industry. And Music Cares, for example, you can call and give them your tour itinerary, and they can hook you up with sober people all over the country that you can hook up with and go to meetings with, or, you know, get support for while you're on tour. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot more going on in terms of, I think, a shift in culture where it's not so cool to be the screwed up rock star. It's more now about transcending that, and mm-hmm. really, it's about your music and
exactly.
using that to give a message.
Yeah, exactly.
The art of it.
The art of it, exactly. And that's where the attention needs to be focused. And I think if we can all focus on that, you know, eventually we'll get to a point to where the media won't feel like that all the people want is the negative. We need to tell them, this is what we want. We're not going to buy the products, or we're not going to continue to watch your shows or do whatever if you're going to continue to focus on the negative.
Right.
And along that with the news of focusing on the negative, I just want to ask you, because you're there in Haiti, you're seeing it all. We hear all the negative stuff, all the horrible things going on. What are the good things that you see over there?
I see tremendous, I mean, this word is a bit overused, resilience, but, you know, this family of Farah, the burn victim that I mentioned, you know, they walked 2 hours each way to come visit me when I was in Haiti last time. And this family, we now are a big extended family. And they're very warm, open people. You know, I used to live in Hawaii, so I kind of have that island mentality anyway. And that's, I think, why I felt so comfortable immediately upon landing in Haiti. It felt Hawaiian in terms of the temperature and the humidity in the air. And also the way the people are. It's very family-oriented society. And just very warm, and they love music, and they're very spiritual. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with the people and just their incredible resilience. There was a little boy, I was telling Dr. Melody on the way up, there was a little boy, my first trip, as I was saying goodbye, it was the last night I was there, and the last busload of people that we had helped were going off. And this little boy leaned out, his name was Sammy, which was my father's name. And he's pointing to this empty cardboard box on the ground. I said, it's empty. You know, we had given them everything we had. Uh-huh. And he points and he says, Jado, Jado. And I think, what is that? Oh, I sleep. I will sleep. He was going to sleep on the cardboard box. He wanted it to sleep on.
Box.
It was going to be for a bed. And so we broke up all the boxes around us and passed them into the windows of the bus. And as the bus was pulling away, he leaned out, and in French, he said, oh, Dr. Nancy, I will never forget you. And I want to believe that. I hope that's true. And I hope that he somehow can take some of my spirit, and it will give him strength to continue.
Right. And he will now take that, because it's made such an impression on him, he's going to go back, and he's going to help somebody else.
Exactly.
Right. I'm feeling so touched right now.
Yeah.
I just think you've got such a beautiful, warm heart, and you're doing so many things. I don't know how you could manage all these things.
You know, it's a little crazy, and I have a lot of great support in my own family, so I'm very appreciative of them. And yeah. Also surfing. I surfing keeps me relatively
balanced.
Sane or balanced.
Yeah.
It helps
well,
me.
Self-care is really important in
it's
our line of work.
Important.
We know that. And anybody that helps other people and puts a lot of energy out, you have to take care of yourself.
Yes.
And put energy into yourself in order to create that balance so you can be there for others. But we're just about out of time here.
Absolutely.
Time went really fast.
And we've got about 30 seconds. So again, please share with us what people can do to help, where they can go to help, and what is the most important thing they can do right now.
You can donate money. That's really what we need, because we're paying for school, we're paying for food, and we're paying for housing. And that's what we need. It's globaladolescentproject.org. Click on donate. You can donate through PayPal, and you can send in checks, globaladolescentproject.org. And I thank you so much, everyone, for supporting us and for our kids.
Oh, and well, thank you for being here,
please,
too.
Please, and thank you so much for being here. And everybody, there are so many things like this, you know, that you will hear about. But understand, when she said 100% of this is going to helping people, that is huge. That the microfinancing means that the money can be used over and over again. So if you really want to do something and you're too busy to go out there and do it yourself, this is a great thing that you can do.
Right.
So,
and $10 a month, it gives...
Absolutely.
Water for one child for an entire month.
Just think, when you take your kid to soccer practice and you buy a bottle of water at 7-Eleven. We just can't do that in Haiti so easily. So thank you so much, everyone, for your support.
You. Absolutely. And everybody, have a great week.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.